wanna be a girl. Was there when you said it was me and you? Believed it when you told me there was nothing that you wouldn't do. And when the world was crashing, it was you that I would call. And when I started slipping, you'd always break my fall. But now it's just me on my own again. Can you through the storm, tell me what it is we're fighting for? Is there any coming back from this? 'Cause I really can't imagine it. So can you hear my voice through the storm? Wish that I could tell.
Dick Deluxe, and I want you all to tune in to 102.3 FM, independent voice music here, and social justice in New Orleans. End all wars. We love live music. We love the musicians in New Orleans, and we love social justice and great community. So join us, 102.3.
This is 102.3 FM WHIVLP New Orleans, powering the airwaves with social justice and human rights since 2014.
What's up, everybody? This is DJ Daniel Gray.
My name's Will Parody.
And y'all are tuned in to Gray Matter, only on
WHIV 102.3 FM, New Orleans Community Radio, dedicated to human rights and social justice.
End all wars. What's up, Will? How you feeling?
Man, Daniel, I'm great.
Awesome. For you guys joining us for the first time, this is Gray Matter. Gray Matter is a show displaying our love for music and current event topics.
It's basically a broadcast of our bromance.
Will and I get to flex our friendship, and we get to share the music and our opinions with you.
So join us, won't you, on Gray Matter.
Love that. Yeah, man, so I'll tell you what's crazy is I think when we all take a look back at some of these, the places that the U.S. is currently interested in, there are definitely places that have already been visited in the past by our federal government for many, well, not many reasons, for oil, right?
Right. Yeah, that's usually what it comes down to. Spoiler, so you don't have to listen to the rest of this episode if you don't want to, but you're listening to Gray Matter, and yeah, Thank you for tuning in. We wanted to take an episode to do a lap on a concept that Daniel and I are starting to try and find the language for, and we're not the first people to come up with this, but we wanted to discuss American empire. We wanted to discuss something that a smarter man than me has described as the practice of an economic hitman. And actually, with that being said, I want to give a shout out to a book that I read a long, long time ago that has been very formative to my perspective of the world. This is Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins. We're going to be pulling from that book a little bit today because he talks about what foreign policy has looked like since roughly World War II in the United States, and how we've moved away from this overt colonialism to something that is more savvy. Colonialism didn't go away, though. It's not like a chapter in your history
book. All that's happened is colonialism has developed and, what's the word, advanced as fast as the rest of the world, as the rest of technology, shall I say. And the reasoning is because you can no longer just walk on someone's property and go, this is mine, and this is never yours.
Yeah.
We're just going to disappear you now.
In modern times, that would look silly, if nothing else, for you to just like show up on somebody else's shores and plant a flag and say, this is mine now, right?
Yep.
So it needs to be more savvy, more subtle,
more insidious.
But it's still happening, and it's happening exponentially more because insidious is the word, right?
Yeah.
The powers that be have always found ways to dupe the rest of us into maintaining and securing wealth and power.
And we're talking beyond just the like smallpox in a blanket. Although that was horrible, they've gotten way more advanced in their approach to poisoning the drinking well, if you will.
So we're going to talk about some historical examples. We're going to talk about what some of those practices look like. And let's start by talking about sort of why did we move away from like the guy with the weird mustache and conquistador armor stabbing a flag in the ground, right? Well, it really comes down to, in the opinion of some historians, the emergence of the nuclear age after World War II. All of a sudden, there is this looming threat of total annihilation if the world broke out into an open war. So the Cold War led to this struggle for power between the United States and the Soviet Union that fortunately never broke out into nuclear war, but there were several fronts on which that power struggle took place, from things like the space race to proxy wars like Korea and Vietnam, to also economic imperialism.
Essentially, and that essentially branches from the ideology that I don't have to be in your face to claim your land. I can shoot you from the shore.
Exactly. Yeah. So the title Confessions of an Economic Hitman, it's a little bit like cartoonish, but it essentially discusses that there's like a consultant class that can be sent into a country from the U.S. government or from corporations, and then commit espionage and subterfuge that essentially cripples that region economically and creates divisiveness that then leads to powers swooping in and putting people that are in their favor in charge or just taking it over themselves.
Which is essentially a sniper shooting you with a long-range rifle and a scope as opposed to the guy walking up to you with a knife and shanking you.
A lot cleaner than a war of conquest, right?
Exactly.
A lot cheaper than a war of conquest. And a little bit more, how would I put it, socially acceptable, right?
Yeah.
It's hard for the UN to conduct sanctions against somebody for like going in and creating like economic hardships in a region. It's a lot easier for the UN to put sanctions down on war crimes being committed. So you see this move away from open war into more subterfuge and economic hitman practices because of the threat of nuclear annihilation, and also because the U.S. In their case was observing that wars like Korea and Vietnam were incredibly costly. Like
extremely.
Yeah, this old model, even as a proxy war, is expensive. It costs a lot of political capital, and there are more efficient ways to do this, right?
Yep.
So the tactics of an economic hitman, and this is like a very broad summary of this great book, it comes down to essentially three different tactics: fostering fear and leveraging debt, creating a sense of scarcity, and inciting divisions among different factions. We can see this playing out on the international level all the way down to like the microscopic level.
Yeah, I have to agree. Tenfold. It's a tried and proven tactic and set of techniques deployed to literally not even have to be in proximity to your target.
So then if you're looking for specific examples, consider the CIA operations that have happened across Central and South America or in the Middle East that were sparked particularly during the Reagan administration to wrest political power. There was a practice, particularly during Reagan, of sending in what they called development specialists or just straight up CIA operatives who typically supported conservative groups that created more divisiveness, that fought against social progress.
Right.
Because, you know, if your back is broken economically, then you're much easier to manipulate and control, right?
Exactly. And so then once we install the need for us to loan you money, we now can say that you're economically tied to the United States.
So an example that I think is really kind of the hallmark for like this model is the 1953 Iranian Revolution.
Yes.
Iran was bold enough to make the decision to try and nationalize its oil industry.
Yes.
Oh no. a country that, you know, has sovereign territory wants right. control over its own natural resources.
Its own natural resource.
The British had been essentially running Iran's oil supply through a corporation, and then eventually the British got iced out by Iran's government.
Yeah.
And if you know anything about sort of modern Iranian history, you'll know that there was this time where Iran was heading in this direction of being incredibly socially progressive, right?
Incredibly.
There were robust universities there.
Yep.
There was a whole academic class. There was a movement towards women's liberation.
Yeah.
It was flowering.
Art was booming. I mean, like a lot of revolution was coming out of Iran. A lot of art. A lot of just if you look at the Persian movement in art alone, it'll blow your mind. The amount of artists that you probably didn't know were, in fact, Persian and creating art at the time that they were.
And so Iran wanted to nationalize its own oil so that it could continue to fund its own social welfare and continue to flower
1,000%.
As an emerging economy and a progressive nation in the Middle East. And
yeah, on an international stage, they wanted to have a piece on the chessboard, which essentially that's what they were doing.
But in 2013, the U.S. government admitted to a CIA operation to spark a revolution in Iran that led to a repressive religious regime that still has ripples across that entire country and region to this day.
It's kind of like if your backwoods country cousins came to town and decided that they were going to take over your city.
Right.
And then install their hillbilly way of life.
Right.
Because that's I think a lot of people don't understand that when they would see the divisiveness that was in play in Iran, like internationally broadcasted, and they would go, I don't need, like the way these people even speak is assaulting. That's because you were hearing the most country hillbilly version of that vernacular, because let me tell you, Farsi is one of the most beautifully spoken languages on the planet, and it's almost like whispered when it's delivered.
Yeah, and so how do these effectively hillbillies get into power? So this is an article that we're going to read from NPR when they talked about the U.S. government disclosing these operations in 2013.
Yes.
Okay, so this is from NPR. So Kermit Roosevelt Jr., who was the grandson of Theodore Roosevelt and an agent in the CIA, quickly seized control of Iranian press by buying them off with bribes and circulating propaganda that was against their sitting president at the time. He recruited allies among the Islamic clergy, and he convinced the Shah that their president, President Mossadegh, was a threat. The last step entailed a dramatic attempt to apprehend Mossadegh in his house in the middle of the night, but the coup failed. Mossadegh learned of it and fought back. The next morning, he announced victory over the radio. Now, eventually, the political strife that was created by the CIA,
right.
The economic anxiety that was created by the CIA,
the destabilization,
caused a revolution to take place where eventually these religious extremists took over the government, and Iran has regressed by generations.
I mean, we're talking about women-led institutions that were suddenly forced back into the ideology of women not having a voice.
But this was a regime that was friendly to the United States government, and therefore it was friendly to sell oil to the United States.
That part.
Of course, that narrative has changed in the last 50 or so years since took place. And you see the consequences of that kind of thing happen with these economic hitman practices, that it's sort of a short-term effort to like secure a natural resource or to like overthrow a regime or whatever and replace it with somebody who's supportive of your government. But then it creates these rippling consequences that in the case of Iran have led to social strife across the entire Middle East.
Yeah, because what you're doing is what ends up happening is the American funding of a dictator. It's that simple. When a dictator is not going to let you bully them around, they're not going to let you tell them what to do. They're going to take that so far, and then they're going to inevitably it's going to be come to a boiling point.
So then there's a really interesting example of kind of like the story told from both ends by the same historical figure.
Uh-huh.
Saddam Hussein, who was the president of Iraq for several decades, a dictator in his own right, at first was part of a political party, the Ba'ath Party, that initiated a coup in Iraq that removed their then prime minister, which led to a coup that led to Saddam Hussein becoming the vice president and then eventually the president. This was backed by the CIA. They provided financial support and equipment to the Ba'ath Party that led to that coup. So another situation where we had a foreign country experience a coup that was financed and supported militarily by the United States government. In this case, it was also sort of nominally about trying to maintain like political influence in the Middle East to defend that region against expansion of Soviet power, right? A lot mm-hmm. of these stories from the last like century or so have been Cold War proxy wars.
Yes.
And in this case, Saddam Hussein came to power because at that time, the U.S. saw him as an ally in that region. Then eventually, about 20 years later, they decided that he wasn't useful anymore. That all of a sudden, he was a dictator. He'd been a dictator the entire time. He was an incredibly cruel and evil person. But it was fine until the United States decided that it wasn't fine anymore.
Yep.
And they decided it wasn't fine because they decided that they needed to, what now? Secure the supply of oil. Yeah. Yeah. Black gold.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what do we see? We see Saddam Hussein going from being considered a United States ally to then the 1993 Iraq War.
Right.
To then being overthrown during the second Iraq War under Bush Jr.
Yep.
And we have seen the rippling consequences of that, that we were stuck in Iraq for decades before we formally pulled out. And we're going to be experiencing the political consequences of that fallout for generations still.
Yep.
Yeah. And I mean, Saddam gave, how do we put it? Saddam walked so that bin Laden could run.
Mm. Well, okay, so like bringing up bin Laden makes me think about Saudi Arabia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Who financed a lot of the Taliban's efforts. And then that led to 9/11.
Yep.
But instead of any sort of military action against Saudi Arabia, we found a scapegoat in Iraq instead.
Yep. Because Saudi Arabia was too strong.
And Saudi Arabia still gets to be a religious dictatorship.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Now, why do they get to continue to operate, Daniel?
Uh-huh.
Because they're still willing to sell oil
still
to the United
States.
They're
still willing to sell oil to the U.S., yeah.
I'm noticing a pattern here, you know? And then this is not something that you'll just see in the Middle East. Confessions of an Economic Hitman also talks about the efforts of John Perkins in Central and South America. So I'm going to read an excerpt from the book where it says, "Economic hitmen often undermine democratically elected leaders across various nations in Latin America. The leaders of Ecuador and Panama, who resisted American corporate and government pressures and remained impervious to the tactics of economic hitmen, perished in airplane crashes that exhibited characteristics of intentional orchestration. The situation surrounding their collapse hinted at possible meddling." So, you know, if the political divisiveness fails...
Right.
If of the economic destabilization fails, then you can just assassinate them.
That's it.
The U.S. has been able to conduct these operations, has admitted to them, and has been doing it at least since the 1950s, if not prior, right?
Probably longer, but admittedly since the 50s.
And has always had this attitude, at least since the 1800s, that we run the entire Western Hemisphere.
Yes.
This idea of the Monroe Doctrine, which we've talked about before, and how essentially it's the U.S.'s foreign policy attitude that it gets to involve itself in any extent that it deems necessary in any affairs in the Americas if it thinks that it's relevant to the U.S.'s interests, right?
It's kind of like how it's not that every country surrounding us doesn't develop and create cutting edge and breaking methodology, technology, procedures to cure, address, prevent. It's just that every time they do, the U.S. hurry up and funds it and then takes over. So in other words, they throw a whole bunch of money at it and say, hey, further your research and development here in America, as opposed to Nicaragua, as opposed to Chile, as opposed to Canada even. They go, come to America where we have all the tools and everything else you'll need, and we'll fund you completely while stealing your intellectual property. So then it becomes U.S.-driven whatever. And it's small little things. Those are even more techniques that are deployed in destabilizing countries, because when you take something that has become a huge resource to that country, something that they could be known for, like cancer research, for example, right? I mean, you take that and you go, hey, we have a larger cancer research facility. We'll pay you, we'll relocate you, pay you, and then basically own, not basically, totally own your intellectual property from here on out, the U.S. government. Then now when you go to report, you say the U.S. came up with XYZ, as opposed to the imported intelligence from Mexico City came up with this. It's all just America's way of saying, no, we control everything.
And, you know, the powers that be will tell you that it's all under this guise of, like, moral superiority.
Absolutely.
That America is trying to, you know, spread democracy, bring justice to these poor nations, right?
Oh, yeah. Think about pre-World War II, the preservatives that are in our food currently weren't in the food before, right? That's because we acquired a company that started showing us how to preserve our own canned goods and dried goods and Twinkies, even how to preserve those things even longer than the shelf life it had. So now, as opposed to having like a 6 to 8 month window with a canned good, you now have years on canned goods because of the preservatives that we acquired from other countries.
So it just is all sort of, to me, at this point in my life, becoming clear that just about any war that the United States decides to involve itself in, you got to follow the money. You got to ask yourself who benefits from this, right? Why are we entrenching ourselves in these decades-long quagmires? And why are we sticking our noses in the business of other countries? It's 100% of the time, at least since I was born, been because somebody's trying to get paid.
1,000%. And to follow up on that, if you follow the money, you will be shocked and awed to find out that it's not always oil. While we're talking about oil today, this is not something just for Exxon and your Shells and your Chevrons. This is every American corporation that has enough money has gotten in on this at some point.
Oh yeah, like look at Nestle. You know, like,
thank you.
The people that
I was trying to remember.
Chocolate?
It's not Nabisco. It's Nestle.
Yeah. Very good point. Nestle, you know, the people that make chocolate are like just destroying economies in the developing world. Just doing all sorts of inhuman practices, right?
Yeah.
A lot of these corporations go to these places because they have almost no labor regulation or environmental regulation, so it's all cheap.
Yep.
And then this is part of, you know, the injustice of it all is that we live in a country that benefits from that exploitation, right?
Absolutely.
That is colonialism. It's just more savvy than like sending, you know, like Dutch merchants to colonize a shore somewhere. We've found a way to save ourselves a lot of work and just outsource a lot of the colonialism, so to speak, right? And get consultants to do it for us instead.
That part. If you look at, here's another little tidbit. If you look at something that a lot of people own, right? So like Air Jordans. You look at Air Jordans and when they were first being made and how they were coming out of Bangladesh and Sri Lanka and all those countries, right? And you look at what happened naturally as a natural disaster in those countries. There was a huge tsunami that happened around the same time as Katrina. And it wiped it out, right? So that all those manufacturers and plants were all gone all of a sudden. Who profited heavily from that? China.
Right.
So China swooped in and said, we got a solution for you. And then they started mass producing Jordans. So now you can go to China, you can go to Thailand and get the same Jordans, maybe without the little jump man or without something. You can get the same shoes for like a fraction of the cost.
You also brought up Katrina, and there's a perfect example of this happening in the United States.
Oh, yeah.
To United States citizens, right? This natural disaster sweeps through New Orleans. It breaks the city's back. It displaces people. It destroys the naturally built up economy here.
Right.
Hollows it out. Yeah. And then it's bought out by property acquisition firms. And
here's the crazy thing. You ask yourself, well, didn't Katrina affect like more of the Gulf Coast than just New Orleans? Yes.
Yeah.
However, other cities, other states were more interested in preserving their local economies than they were opening up to international markets. So what we saw in New Orleans was like a petri dish for what happens if we let international buyers come and buy up everything. What happens? What does that look like for Americans going forward? Well, now we can see New Orleanians rarely live in New Orleans now because it's so ridiculously overpriced. And after you move to the outskirts as much as you can while still being in New Orleans, and that becomes infeasibly expensive and unaffordable, then there's nowhere else to go. You just leave.
Right. A couple decades later, and the city's middle class is crumbling. It's a really tough city to try and make a living and raise a family in.
Oh, yeah. Like, look, if you are living in New Orleans currently and you're not here 6 months a year and then you leave 6 months, then you're struggling. There's no other way to put it. And if you don't work in an industry that isn't tourism-based, you are struggling.
So this is an example of like two really important points to me, that it isn't as simple as like one nation state, one country doing this to another country,
right?
Because this is American corporations doing this
doing
to American citizens, right?
Oh, yeah.
So it just is so insidious and savvy and so hard to pin down, because it's like we don't really have the story structure that we can like draw lines around some of these forces, right?
Absolutely.
Like it's really easy to point at, I mentioned the Dutch earlier and like the colonization that they did in West Africa and how terrible that was, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like very overt, very 17th, 18th century colonialism. That stuff still happens. It's just that
It still happens.
It isn't as simple as like planting a flag and doing it in the name of a king.
Right.
It's always in service of enriching somebody, but like, you know, you have a lot of kings, so to speak, in this country that don't need the title to still enjoy the benefits
of
like not having to answer for the injustice and cruelty that they enact.
Right.
So
now you'll be held accountable by several countries that have band together to form organizations.
So it's not so much about nation state stuff. It's about like predatory economic practices.
Bingo.
Put them slave name for heading up your soul. mentality now make you hear me now. It's a ransom me make you hear. It's a Williams me make you hear. It's a Aliyah me make you hear. It's a Mohammed me make you hear. It's a Anglican me make you hear. It's a Bishop me make you hear. It's a Catholic me make you hear. It's a Muslim me make you hear.
This is something that I think that we have explored before that I think is really good to do a lap on for a second. Mm-hmm. This assumption that just because, like, people make money, it qualifies them to lead, or that they have our best interests at heart, right? Like, corporations are not people. And something that we've spoken about before on this show is that if you're somebody who believes in running the government like a business, there are things that the government does that are not about optimizing wealth.
I will remind people that Ray Nagin thought he could run New Orleans like a business.
Right.
And he sat in jail for those practices. So, I mean, may not be the wisest idea.
But part of the reason why is because it creates this unholy alliance of corporate money and corporate interests all of a sudden being at the seat of power and having their hands on the levers of government power and military power, which especially terrifying.
That's why lobbyists exist nowadays, right? Tobacco was the first one to really flex their muscles on that one, tobacco and then oil. And they got all these lobbyists in Congress, and now they have efficient voting power, so they're never going away.
And again, it's like something that's really hard to pin down. You know, you can't point at like one thing and be like this is the group of people that we need to go to war with. But like, it just kind of insidiously like gets its tentacles inside of all different institutions inside of our own government, and then it kind of like eats its own tail, because then you can turn around and like you look at the military-industrial complex where the government starts to subsidize and fund these corporations, right? We can talk about Blackwater, a mercenary group that has taken on a ton of contracts from the United States, but also from other political interests.
Big time.
Benefiting from political divisiveness, right?
Oh, yeah. Like Blackwater, I remember when Blackwater, around the time they started up during Operation Iraqi Freedom, I was in the Middle East and I worked for them temporarily. And I remember there were no private contractors that were civilians. Everybody had security clearances and top secret clearances granted by the United States military. So you were from some branch of the military. You knew you were all working as current military members under Blackwater, privately contracting yourself, right? So you were able to make money, like serious money. And this was moonlighting. This was a moonlighting job that was approved. When it was realized that, like, an enlisted personnelman who may not even be something, may not even be an E4 or higher, was making the kind of money that an officer was making, the outrage started to creep in. So now it was, well, you can't work these jobs because you're not technically qualified, although you are. You can't work these jobs. We can't do this. So it became more of a military officer. If you had a commission, you were allowed to go and work for one of the private contractors like Blackwater. But that became too expensive because, you know, an officer is not going to let you underpay them. So the military said, nope, no more, at least not while you're still active. Let's go ahead and once you're out, you can do whatever you want. But while you're active, you can't concurrently work for these other entities as a mercenary. Then Blackwater started to open up its gates to any reject from any police department, any reject that could not become a military personnel person. Anyone who couldn't meet the standard was suddenly in the Middle East working as a guard for Blackwater.
Okay, and so you hit on something really important, which I think that we can also see sort of a global trend, is that these are governments that are starting to outsource their military operations to these corporations that are not beholden to things like the United Nations, that you can't pin war crimes on, right?
Right.
It's like a way for the United States to sweep in, create political chaos and a power vacuum. Effectively, you say that they're running a country.
Absolutely.
But then when anybody asks, like, what does that mean? Like, how do you run another country?
Right.
They can outsource it to a corporation that doesn't really have like the lines drawn around it for us to like hold it accountable to anything, right?
Well, I distinctly remember during that era when Blackwater was everywhere taking up all the contracts. I remember distinctly when it was revealed that they were raping women in Arab countries and small Persian countries, and they were taking advantage of sexual assault or just the amount of just like wrongdoing and the depth of it, how deep it went. I mean, everything from running illegal cockfights to raping people.
There you go. Yeah.
And that was all in the name of destabilization.
Yeah. Yeah. It's the natural consequences of this, right?
Yeah.
Because a corporation is always going to try and cut corners, reduce costs, increase overheads for its shareholders, right? They
because
don't care about
when
ethics.
They, when they first start, they're all by the book. They're all on a level so they can gain reputation and acknowledge, be acknowledged as, like, the new standard. And then when you're not looking, they flip the switch, and here come your hillbilly cousins that, you know, from God knows where, they just flood the market, and all of a sudden you're like, wait, you're not supposed to do that on this position, on this post. And they're going, yeah, you can, man, you can do whatever you want. You want to do this? Let's do this. And it's like, oh my God, like, where are the standards? This is not supposed to be happening. Yeah, yeah. It is. That's the design of it.
Yeah, they seep into our domestic government and push for deregulation. They receive government contracts to develop weapons of war and mercenary contracts. They need to perpetuate war so that they can continue to exist. And then if enough of them get inside of power in a government, then that government just starts doing business for them, right? The military starts just becoming a branch of corporate interests.
Oh, yeah.
And don't think that we're the only country that is doing this kind of thing.
Oh, no, we're not. Not by far.
No. I think if we go back to the Confessions of an Economic Hitman and consider the idea of inciting political divisiveness, we have openly seen the Russian government do that in the last, what, 15-ish years in this country?
Yeah.
Like, basically, as long as social media has existed, there have been troll farms, which is a form of economic hitman practices, right? And it's a cheap one.
A very cheap one.
You just get a couple dozen guys in a troll farm somewhere, and they do effectively psyops in the United States. And again, you can't draw lines around something like social media because it's barely regulated. So who's to say that you can't make an account, get on there, and lie?
Yeah.
Especially when, like, these companies wash their hands of trying to do any sort of fact checking or anything like that.
Well, what was so funny was when this was right after Trump imposed all of the EV taxes on developers, right? So Elon Musk, let's just call it out. Right around that time, Elon decided to reveal where all the accounts on Twitter were actually based. And when people saw that a lot of these, like, well-known Twitter handles were actually based in Russia, China, et cetera, it goes on and on, the list of how bad we were being trolled, you didn't need fact-checking anymore. And the only reason why that was done is because Trump said, no, you're not going to get welfare queen, you're cut off, basically. It's funny that that's what had to happen for us to know the truth, but, like, it doesn't. Now you can see the troll accounts because they all have to have a geotag.
We also heard around the 2016 election the term economic anxiety get kicked around quite a bit, right?
A lot.
Creating this sense of scarcity, like the book talks about, and planting in people's heads that...
Verbatim. It was done copy and paste.
Yeah. Another example would be the Chinese government, which there's a point made that it's not as, like, in your face and violent as, like, U.S. empire. But China, as it emerges on the world stage, is already practicing its own insidious forms of economic hitman practices. There is a project called the Belt and Road, which is essentially a massive trade route that China wants to plan across the entire old world continental system.
Yes.
All the way out to Europe, all the way down through Africa, all the way back to Beijing. It's offering a lot of money to build up that infrastructure, which then will make the countries that are involved in this project beholden to the Chinese government, right? It's wrapped up and packaged in this way where it's like, this is good for everybody, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's one party that's making off with that deal much more than the other one, right?
Absolutely.
We're in our own country. We have a massive amount of debt that is owned by the Chinese government at this point. Straight up economic hitman practices.
Yeah.
So don't think that it isn't happening here.
We encourage you, find out where the money's going. Find out who has to profit the most, and you'll get your answers. If it's not the people, which it rarely is, if it's not the people, then it's a corporation. And if you want to continue to feed corporations, just keep being blind to it all. But if you want to make a change, you got to be the change you want to see made.
I guess that is what's actionable, is that it's making me ask myself, like, where can I cut back on my own reliance on these businesses, right?
I am happy to report I will never buy another Chinese bag of crawfish.
There you go, yeah.
In the state of Louisiana.
Or, like, I'm currently fasting from social media, which I think is just an arm of, like, corporate propaganda at this point, and mm-hmm. I'm much happier being off of there because I think that a long time ago I got weaponized and just became nothing but troll farms. I'm trying to disentangle myself from that, right?
And I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
Because it's hard to draw lines around it, I think that's another reason to sort of like focus on your own like consumption
that
and your
part.
Own participation in all of this. Because like, I don't even know what I would do if yeah. I'm not going to fight Blackwater, you know? I can look at like how, like where does my money go and like what information am I consuming and what stories am I propagating, you know? How do we use this platform?
Exactly.
Those are all things that I have control over in the face of this huge, weird, insidious problem.
That part.
Yeah.
I recently decided that I was going to actively avoid purchasing anything from Amazon. So I went to the extent of contacting even like the company that makes my refrigerator water filter. I just subscribe to their company and
yeah,
they send me them every 6 months, as opposed to subscribing to Amazon, which did the same thing. And then, you know, like made sure, hey, we're going to charge your account for blah, 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 blah. So I cut out Amazon, and I've done that with so many different things, and I've gone back to shopping in person. And if they don't have it, I'm just let down. Or I go on the internet, look up their company and order it direct from them. Yes, it is going to cost me a few dollars extra, but it's not worth saving $4 or $5 in the long run to give Jeff Bezos more money to go launch, you know, penis-shaped rockets into space.
I really applaud that. I actually think that this is starting to evolve into its own sort of bonus episode.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Look at how you're contributing to your dollars being spent beyond your pocket. And if you can curb it, curb it. Because the best way to hit rich people where it hurts is to limit their access to funds.
But follow the money. Stay informed.
Follow the money.
And ask yourself how you can disentangle yourself from this. Topics for us to sink ourselves into on this show. So thank you for joining us. And let's close it out, I think, right?
Here's some more amazing music. Thanks for tuning in to Gray Matter.
Cause you realize, is that? Real talk, pretty little neat walk. Can you be my sweetheart? Live for me, my real heart. Yeah. Touch me from my six pack. With a kickback, fuck up on a split, girl. Can you with the distance? Be there in an instant. Make your boss a big bam.
understand. The sun tried to understand, the gun made me understand. The rain tried whispering the warning, the land shaking plus the rhythm is enormous. All the forces like a portal to a vortex, connected to the stars, just projecting where we part at. Pull up where you park at, aim a little dark, look, where your bark at. It'd be a shame if you stayed in them apartments. 12 barely came to them apartments. Catch a play and then parlay in them apartments. I swear it's like a party every day in them apartments. You was raised in them apartments, dang. Jump a shot or join a gang in them apartments. My mama say we gotta get away from them apartments. It's graves in them apartments. And they ain't got to end this way, cause we ain't started.
Okay, I don't give a f- about no industry beef. Ain't nobody give a f- when Tay was dead in the street. I don't do this shit you see on the screens. I've been tapped in with true things. I peep your rap cap and I unscrew things. I don't give a f- about them f- at the top. The biggest f- on the block still get shot. Pop, you thinking pop, I'm thinking f- can't talk about that f- from
you gotta chill
you
out.
You seen Fox?
Lisan Al-Gaib, I see a tiny line of silver. A way to make a play, although they say it's unfamiliar. It's off the kilter. I say the words without a filter. You gotta have nerve, it'll make you strong if it don't kill you. I'll put a bullet in Bob the fucking builder before they try and kick us out the building. What about the children? When I check a news channel, I get a similar feeling, but still, we gon' make it to heaven, high water or hell, but don't take the highways. 285 behind the damn wheel, it's like a driveway. Giving all I could give Christ, and I do it twice. Shot Gilchrist, heard thunder hit with lightning, and still I didn't feel shit. Talk about resilience, off of Stone Mountain, locked on you, where I honed into my brilliance. It was after then I took my talents right up to Virginia. Heard they said that she for lovers was good but gritty. I could tell you what it was, but let bro tell you what I'm missing. Pay attention.
What's missing in my hood, I identified. Then I brought white to my hood, that gentrified. We had military arms, we would simplify. Point blank, let me simplify. I've been light post corner boy, green box sitter, crack. Trying to hustle up and act bigger. Six deuce by it, really live the wire. From lookouts, then we meteor to suppliers. Caged in, one way out. Robocops on mountain bikes, ain't pulling mace out. Just trying to get back home from getting chased out. A week ago, a boy like me don't got a face now. Departments, the projects, the ghettos all the same. Crazy how we hopscotch in double dutch danger. We ADHD and all the pills that you gave us. How we supposed to process this anger?
The rain couldn't understand it. The pain made them understand. The sun tried to understand, the gun made me understand. The wind tried whispering the warning, the land shaking plus the rhythm is enormous. All the forces like a portal to a vortex, connected to the stars, just projecting where we part at. Pull up where you park at, aim a little dark, where your bark at.
My ghetto's not your culture. Really die here, so hard to say goodbye. Is the only lullaby here. Kilos turning boys to men. Gotta pick a side here. Some with Jesus Shuttlesworth, some of us with Nasirs. As time goes by, it's an eye for an eye here. My mob deep, the fittest gon' survive here. We New Jersey drive here, chop shop ride here. This jack in the box shouldn't come as no surprise here. You drink the own street cred, gets denied here. Section 8 living, we treat it like a timeshare. Mother, auntie, cousin couldn't tell you who reside there. But never seen a father that was government devised here. Conquer and divide here, crash and collide here. When kings can't raise a young prince, the doves cry here. Candy lady right there, zombie land right there. Them apartments be the perfect backdrop for any nightmare.
Inside my head,
would you believe it?
It ain't even fair. And take that off soon as I can. There ain't nothing you need to wear. I'm in a race with time to get where I am.
myself inside my go-yard if I have to. I'm in love, you in love, I'm above. You my drug, you my plug. Through the storm, through the flood, I'm a rush. I'll go so far as to put myself inside my go-yard if I have to. I'm in love, you in love, I'm above. You my drug, you my plug. Through the storm, through the flood, I'm a rush.
Touching down, I can't sleep till you touch me, baby. When can you make it feel good before I leave again?
This is Jimmy Anselmo, and I am from Jimmy's Music Club, The Movie. And you are listening to 102.3 WHIV in New Orleans, community radio station dedicated to human rights and social justice. And as George McGovern once said, I'm fed up to the ears with old men dreaming of wars for young men to die in.
This is 102.3 WHIVLP New Orleans, the voice of the city.
The All-American Half-Pound, Pure Beef Patty, lettuce, tomatoes.
Greetings, New Orleans. Welcome to the 504 Underground Music Show. I'm your host, Steve Wattstyle, and I'll be taking you on a journey through time with some vintage underground music from New Orleans, right here on WHIVLP 102.3 FM New Orleans.
Cheating and look at the cost. Look what you're getting and look what you've lost. Listen, it's war I'm declaring on you. You don't stop doing the things you do. You better stop, look and listen. Stop, look and listen. Hey, stop, look and listen at what I'm telling you. Took. You can't fool me, mama, it's all in my book. You better stop, look and listen. Well, stop, look and listen. Oh, stop, look and listen. What am I telling you? Now stop your thinking that you're so smart. Look, I'm talking straight from my heart. Listen, that's how it's gotta be. Ain't no kidding, like you can fool a cat like me. You better stop, look and listen. Stop, look and listen. Well, stop, look and listen. Well, the what I'm telling, telling you.
Whiskers on my chin and a hair on my chest. When it comes to being a man, I'm one of the best. Stop treating me like a baby before you make me sore. I'm the man who found out what goes on behind the green door. They're rocking and a rolling and shaking that thing. They're hopping and a jumping when they get in the swing. A dancing and a dining and drinking their beer. The man who found out is standing right here. I'm the man, the man, the only man, and I really know the score. I'm the man, the man, the only man, the man who found out what goes on behind the green door. They're rocking and a rolling and shaking that thing. They're hopping and a jumping when they get in the swing. A dancing and a dining and drinking their beer.